Thank you, Rebecca team, for hosting and for arranging this beautiful event.
Today's horror story begins with an excited young Kala. She had just gotten engaged, and she was planning her dream wedding. And she had heard about a very talented makeup artist that a friend of hers had used. So she got her contact information and texted her, "Are you available January 1st for my wedding?" So she responded, "Sure." So she wanted to know, how many faces can you do? What are your rates? What do I need to know? And she responded, "I can do 4 faces. This is the amount of time. And you know what? I'll pencil you in. We'll speak after Yontif." After Yontif, the Kala again checks in, tested the artist, and wanted to know, wanted to confirm, this is the hall that the wedding is going to be at. And again, you know, what is the cost? And what are the arrangements? And the artist responds that, "Okay, we have you. I have you down for that hall, no problem." A week before the wedding, the Kala again texts the makeup artist with some questions. And she responds with the information, along with a little note, "Please send $1,000 deposit for the chasm." And the Kala was a bit surprised. She wasn't sure exactly what this is supposed to cost, but $1,000 deposit seemed a bit steep. So she texted back, "Fine, no problem. What is going to be the total cost?" To which the response was $5,000. And if you want me to say through venging, $6,500. Kala was rather shocked. Now again, I'm not such an expert in makeup artists, but I am under the distinct impression that normal people don't spend that kind of money. So when she finally recovered, picked the phone up off the floor, she called the makeup artist and said that, you know, this is really not what I had in mind. I didn't know it was that expensive. At that point, what she did, what all good Kalas do, she handed the phone to her mother. Her mother starts hondling, makeup artist starts yelling and screaming, "It's a week before the wedding, how can you do this to me? I don't negotiate on price." They get into a shouting match. The father walks into the room, he sees the Kalas in tears. His wife is steaming, picks up the phone, talks to her and says, "Okay, you know, forget about it, it's not worth fighting. This is a person who Rav Pam used to say that people have set aside money for their retirement account, that people are saving aside money for a car. Everyone should have a shalom bayis account. A few dollars put aside that whenever you need mana shalom, you just spend a few extra dollars with Rebbetzin, maybe puts a little bit too much on the credit card." So the father figured this is as good of a time as any to deplete the fund, tells the makeup artist, "Don't worry, it's fine, I'll send you the deposit, we're up." An hour later, he starts having karata. "What did I just do?" And he calls his rav, "What is the halacha? How do you deal with this situation?" Now, I trust this story is not going to happen to anyone in the room. But as we're going to see, a fairly straightforward story is going to bring out many concepts in halacha that each and every one of us face literally on a daily basis. And normally when people have such questions, as the Rav mentioned, they make their own decision. They do what feels right, or they do what they can get away with, depending on the person. But as we're going to see, Chosh Mishpat Halacha has what to say about each and every one of the prophet, each and every one of the details. So we're going to go through the many issues or shailos that really come out from this situation. The focus is not so much what to do in this particular case if it happens to you, but we're going to use this as a springboard to deal with many common issues. So the first question we have to address is, what was the relationship between the Kala and this makeup artist? Now the Kala had hired her for a job, but it was nothing more than a verbal agreement. It was words. It was a conversation. There was no contract that was signed. There was no formal kinyan. It was nothing more than a verbal agreement. Is a verbal agreement enforceable in halacha? So this brings us to the concept of mechusar aman. On one hand, we find that if someone is nosi b'dvarim, he negotiates, he has a verbal agreement, it's not, a bezdin cannot enforce such an agreement. We've all heard of the concept of a kinyan. We know if you want to buy something, there's Mashiach, there's Hagbah, there's Chazaka, there's Chalipin. There are a host of different types of kinyan for different types of transactions. But in the absence of a kinyan, if it's nothing more than words, you have an agreement, you said that's it, we have a deal. So the halacha is best and cannot enforce it. A mekach is not nikkud mitvarim, and either party has the right to back out. When they say talk is cheap, as a matter of halacha, that is true. You cannot enforce a verbal agreement. Now that does not mean, simply the fact that you can get away with it, if you back out, Bezdin can't force you to go through with the deal, does not mean that that's the right thing to do. And the halacha is, someone who is noisa b'dvarim, someone who has a verbal agreement, although he could back out, but the lashon is, in ruach hachamim nojdehimen. Chazal are displeased with his actions. And although this sounds a little bit parrot, just doesn't the Chazal doesn't have nachas ruach. Nevertheless, Maramin says that the Bezdin can pressure the person, can call him a rasha, because he is not being even al dibura. When a person gives his word, pasuk tells us hin shel chatzedek or shares yisrael lo yasal avul lo yidaber chazal. When a Jew gives his word, he's supposed to honor it. And backing out is simply the wrong thing to do. So you'll get away with it. If you make an agreement and you change your mind, Bezdin can't force you to go ahead and to consummate the deal. However, nevertheless, it's an avla. It is certainly the wrong thing to do. Now, this applies in all types of transactions. The Gemara has a case where you pledge to give a present. You tell someone you're going to give them a present. If you change your mind, you have second thoughts. So you Bezdin can't force you to give the presents. There's no kinyan. But such a person is called a mechusar aman. So if you go to a chasana, an old friend, you're very, very touched by the wedding, and you go and you tell him, I'm going to give you the chasin $1,000 wedding gift. You then come home and you tell your wife what happened, and she's not very pleased. So in that case, you no one can force you to give the present, but someone who backs out is Ein Ruach Chacham Noikimenu, he's Mechusar Aman. Now, in here the Gemara makes, there are two important distinctions, two important limitations to this concept. The first is the idea of Matana Merubah. And that is, the Gemara explains, the issue of Mechusar Aman is when you make a commitment and the other person relies on it. He takes it seriously, he believes it's going to happen, and then you change your mind. So while there's no kinyan, nevertheless, change your mind is an avla, it's mechusar aman. On the other hand, the Gemara says, by a matana merubah, if you pledge to give a very generous gift, a matana merubah, the person, your recipient, is not soinuch das. He's hopeful that he'll get it, but until the check clears, he's not really convinced. So in that case, by a matana merubah, when it's a large gift, there, since the recipient wasn't so sure he would get it, he's not saying das, there this idea of mechusar aman does not apply, and if you do change your mind, then you are not considered a mechusar aman, you do not over this issue. Now what is a matana merubah? How do you define a large gift? That is subjective. Hakol lefi hamakom v'hazman. It depends how wealthy of an individual you are. It depends how wealthy the recipient thinks you are. Is he soimach das on this gift or not? So you can have two people, one the same, even the same level of affluence, one of them makes this gift or makes this pledge, it's binding, the other one it will not be. The difference is, one of them is a hotshot that drives around in a Lamborghini. He flaunts his wealth. He lives in a mansion. He's jetting around the world on vacation every couple of weeks. So when he says he's going to give a $500 gift, everyone says, for him, I can be sent of das. He's good for his money. I'm certainly going to get it. It's matan muwazas. On the other hand, another person may be just as wealthy, but he's a little bit more tenua with his wealth, not engaged in so much conspicuous consumption. So when he makes that pledge, people don't know how much money he has in the bank. That's a matan muwazas. I mean, matan merubah. And there, if he backs out, he would not be over this din of mechusar aman. So if you need another reason not to show off, this is another reason. There's actually a story told with the Goyner of Kiva Eger. He once went on vacation to a village, and he wanted some peace and quiet. He wanted just to be able to learn the menucha. So he made arrangements. He had an old childhood friend who lived in a little hut on the corner, in the outskirts of the city. He figured he'll go there. No one will know where he's. No one will know that he's there. No one will bother him. It'll be wonderful. He shows up, and he arrives at the train station. And lo and behold, the word had spread that the Goyim Kiveyim was coming to town. Everyone in the entire town came out to greet him. The Paris Seir comes. He greets him. He welcomes him into his wagon, with it being led by stallions, and he promptly kidnaps him. He says, "You are not staying in that little hovel at the side of town. You're staying by me." And he brings him to his mansion in the middle of the city. The next day, Rukideyu got up to say a shir to the tzibur, and he begins with the halachos of Mechusar Amonim. And he says, "I have to ask mechila for my friend who was supposed to host me, because I made a commitment to him I would stay by him. I'm changing my mind, I backed out. It's Mechusar Amonim, and I have to ask mechila." Says, but then maybe then in the occasion, perhaps not. Why? Because a matana meruba, if you pledge to give a large gift, matana meruba, there's no smichas das. So this friend, the schos and the kavod to host the great goyin Rukiveger, is a matana meruba. It's matana meruba. I have the right to change my mind, and there's no mechusar amonim. However, Rukiveger continued in his great humility. Ich weiß, I know. The Rukiveger is not such a big guy. I know he's not such a big tzaddik. I know it's not such a big schus to recover to stay in it to go ahead and to stay in it and to host Rukiveger. Memeil l'shitasi, what I pledge to do is a matana muetas. Matana muetas. I have an obligation to follow through. I can't back out, and therefore I'm going to publicly ask mechila for this chaver for being chayzer. Now, in truth, halacha l'maisa, even again, Rukiveger was Rukiveger, but even Lu Yitzur, everyone just thinks he's a Rukiveger, even if they happen to be incorrect. Since matan, the idea of smichas das depends on what the recipient thinks. So over here, certainly a matan meruba l'chayra, he would have the right to back out regardless. Now, I gave a shiur about this topic once a number of years ago. It's actually from Moisit. And after I introduced this concept of Matam Rubu Matam Ruetas, a fellow in the back raised his hand, and he actually addressed the Rosh Shiva, the Rosh of the Moisit, and said, and apparently the night before there had been, the Yeshiva had a dinner. It showed a video, it was a very inspirational dinner. And the fellow raised his hand and turned to the Rosh Shiva and said, "Do you remember last night how inspired I was by the dinner? What a beautiful dinner you had." "Yes." "Do you remember that I got up there on the moment, at the spur of the moment, and I pledged a $50,000 donation?" I said, "Yes." "Would you agree that that is a very generous matana meruba?" "Well, if yes," nice, turns to me, "can the rabbi please tell the Rosh Hashiva I have the right to back out?" I was never invited back. So, I was in trouble. What's the halacha? Is he right? The answer is not so fast. Because it's true, when you pledge to give a matana meruba, there's no smichas das, you have the right to be chayzer. But that's when you're giving a present, a matana, a gift. When a person pledges to give to a yeshiva, that already moves from a sugya chayshin mishpat of mechusar amana. Now we're dealing with a neder litzvah. A person says he's giving charity to do a dvar mitzvah, that's a neder. In Hilchos Nedarim, there's no concept of mechusar amana of eilu ochachom min oichim. And therefore, since it is tzedakah, once you make the pledge, you'd have an obligation to follow through, and you'd actually have to give that donation. Now, based on that, to go back to our wedding case, what happened? You had a childhood friend, you told the person, I'm going to give a chosim $1,000 wedding gift. Now we said, that's a matana meruba, and therefore there'll be no mechusar amana. However, we act not so fast. Is this chosim an ani or an asher? Now many young couples, when they first get married, do not have much in the way of assets. Many of them were still learning in Kohl, they don't have a way to support themselves, and they may very well qualify as an ani. If that's the case, then your pledge was not just a matana meruba, it was perhaps a neder litzdaka, and you would not be able to back out. On the other hand, a more affluent chassan who doesn't qualify as an oni, then we go back to the concept of mechusar amana, and then you would be able to be chayzer. Now it is important to realize that although if you change your mind, you have the right to be chayzer, if a person, when he gives the gift, or when he makes the pledge, in the back of his mind says, I'm safe. This is a matana meruba. I know the rabbi said there's no mechusar amana, so I'll make the gift and then I'll figure it out later on. So there, this is much worse. A person who is not sincere when he makes the pledge, there, that's considered, that is echad b'pedach and b'lev. You're saying one thing with your mouth, but you're thinking something else with your heart. That is more chomer, that's certainly going to be usur. Matan ruba, matan muetes is irrelevant. It's because you're saying something that is not true, that you don't mean. Our issue here is you say something, you make a commitment at the time it's sincere, and later on, you change your mind, or perhaps your wife changes her mind for you. Now that is the first point. The concept of a large gift, you do not have, the commitment is, may not be binding. The second important exception, and this is a machlokes rishonim, but the Baal Mar learns that by trade tara, then there's no mechusar amana. If there's a material change in the market, the price changes after the commitment, Baal Mar learns you have the right to be chayzer. You committed to buy this car for $10,000 when that was its value. If the next day the price of oil skyrockets and now therefore the SUV is worth a lot less, the value changes. So there, you're not simply changing your mind. You're not just backing out of a commitment that you made. The commitment that you made is outdated. It wasn't made under these set of circumstances. And therefore, the Baal Mar learns by trade tower, when there's a material change in the marketplace, you have the right to be chayzer, and it is not the chusar amana. Now this is a machlokes rishonim. Most Rishonim actually reject it. However, the Bach says the Yerushalmi learns like similar to the Baal Mar. And therefore, as a matter of halacha, although the Ramah learns that a person should be machmir, even by trei tara, nevertheless, many Achronim say the minhag, and a person can be soimich lahakol, if there's a material change in the market. Now this happens very often. Someone will be trying to sell his house, he'll accept an offer, and a day, 2 or 3 days later, someone else will come in with a much higher offer. That is trei tara. And therefore, according to the Baal Mar and Halacha Maisa, a person has the right to be chayzer because there is a material change, there is now a much better offer. Still, Temidus Chasidus, to honor your word regardless, but if a person wants to back out, he would have the right to do so. Now, based on this, going back to our case, was there a contract between the makeup artist and the kala? No. There was nothing more than a verbal discussion, an informal text message. So, l'chayra, what we're dealing with is only a question of mechusar amana. If it's a question of mechusar amana, if someone wants to back out, someone has cold feet, especially when you're dealing with a large sum of money, perhaps the idea of, certainly a bezdin can't enforce the matter because there's no formal contract, but changing your mind once you made a commitment would be mechusar amana, would be in ruach hachamim noichei himenu. Now, this is true in most cases. If you just agree, I'm going to buy a car, I'm going to sell the car, I'm going to buy your nursing home, and then you want to change your mind, it's not enforceable, there's no kinyan. There is, however, a very important exception. And that is siras payolim. When you hire a worker, very often you hire a worker, there's no kinyan. The last time you took a taxi, you didn't sign a contract with the driver before you got into the car. You hire someone to paint your house, very often, you talk to someone and you agree on a price and he starts working. When a person finishes the job and he hands you a bill, can you tell the person, I'm sorry, there was no contract, we never made a kinyan, I'm not going to pay you what I told you? So clearly not. By siras payolim, when you hire someone, once he starts the job, it's irrelevant whether there was a kinyan. It's irrelevant whether there's a contract. The moment he starts the job, that is the equivalent to the kinyan, and everyone is locked into the terms of the deal. Now this happens all the time. You can have dinei Torah. There could be a dispute between the employer and the employee. And at some point, the boss will say, it's true, I told him this, I told him I'll do this for him, I'll tell him I'll do that. But we never signed a contract, nothing's in writing. It's completely irrelevant. Because once you agree, I'm going to, these are the terms of the employment, I'm going to pay you this amount, you do the job, this is what you're going to get. The moment he starts the job, the employer is locked in, he cannot change his mind. And even if there's no contract, that just means if the boss wants to lie, if he wants to deny the arrangement, it's going to be hard for the employee to prove what happened. But if the facts are clear, if he admits these are the terms, the fact that it was not written down is irrelevant, and the employer is locked in to the terms of the agreement. Now this is when the person begins the job. Once he starts working, the boss is locked into whatever he committed. What about beforehand? What if you verbally tell someone, please come on Monday, paint my house, this is what I'll pay you. Someone comes for a job interview, you're impressed, you say, wonderful, we have a deal, start on Monday. So in that case as well, is there a formal kinyan? No. It's nothing more than deeper. Does that mean that a person can back out and change their mind? So here, things get a little bit more complicated. And that is, there's a concept of a double offer, which means as follows. If you tell someone, okay, Monday morning, come paint my house. An hour later, husband finds out what you just did and says, nothing doing. Cancel the employee. In that case, you have the right to do. You normally have the right to do so. However, what happens if you schedule a band for your casa? They pencil you in. They mark you down on the calendar. You have a deal. The day before the wedding, you change your mind. Now, the day before the wedding, is this band going to find another casa to play at? They're going to find another job? Most likely not. Which means that it's true. It's just words. But here, your words have an effect. Here, because you hired the person, they thought they had they turned away other customers. And now, a day before, when it's too late to find another job, you change your mind. So here, you're causing them a loss. And the halacha is in such cases, even though it's nothing more than words, no contract, no kinyan, you're responsible for the loss that you cause. And therefore, you will hire someone, you tell them you have a job, you make reservations, whether it's at a hotel, a restaurant, you make a doctor's appointment. And then, the last minute, you change your mind. And now that slot remains open. They have every right to send you a bill. Because you've caused them a loss. Now, what happens, it comes out as far as halacha l'maisa, you come out with two extremes. If you're dealing with a doctor that's very successful, a restaurant that's very successful. So usually, even if you make a reservation, you make an appointment, then you change your mind. Usually they have a waiting list. The restaurant, people are constantly walking in. So in that case, when you change your mind, you haven't caused any loss, and they can't send you a bill. On the other extreme, if this restaurant is very unsuccessful, whenever you walk in, there are always empty tables. If his doctor has plenty of open appointments, so then, even if you made an appointment and you cancel literally 5 minutes before, you haven't caused the loss. Because they didn't turn away other customers, other patients, other clients because of you. So in that case as well, there's no liability. The problem is, someone who is reasonably successful, you make the reservation, because of that they're full, they hold the slot, they turn away other customers, and then you back out when it's too late to find a replacement. Then you've caused a financial loss, and then they can actually send you a bill. And therefore, again, this halacha l'maisa, you make a doctor's appointment, and you decide last minute, your plans change, you want to go, you're not interested, you'd rather meet your old friend than actually have a root canal today. So the bottom line is, the dentist, if he's losing, if he now has an empty slot, he has every right to send you a bill for the loss that you've caused. Now, interestingly enough, when he sends you the bill, he can't send you a bill for the full amount. Because he also benefits. Instead of doing the root canal, he has 20 minutes where to relax, to talk on the phone, he doesn't have to work. So assuming that normally has value. He went to a dentist and said, you have two choices. Either do the root canal and charge $1,000, or just take off and I'll give you $500 just to do nothing. Very likely. He'd rather take the $500 and have a little break in his day than do the root canal. So this is the concept of paying kapital batel. Whenever you get a bill because of the fact that the person now has no job, you make an adjustment as a reduction to reflect the fact that he doesn't have to work, and it's going to be more pleasant for him.
So the kapital, does it make a difference if the amount is not set?
Excellent. We're getting there. Yeah, the Taz brings down that he found in Klafio that the baseline is 50%. Most places say it is subjective. So depending on how difficult your job is, the more difficult the job, the more of a discount you're willing to give to take off. On the other hand, a Malamed, a Rebbe, who he wants to teach. So there's no benefit for having Roth. He wants to give the shiur. So there, the Poel Batel is the reduction is zero. Now even then, that's the assumption in halacha that a Rebbe who's doing it wants to do it. If the situation is not like that, you'll have to look at the facts in the ground.
By a dentist or a doctor, $1,000, you've got to pay like the insurance company. They're not going to pay for reproducing the claim.
That's true. So
now the fact that you got in my pocket.
That's true. So don't do it. But the bottom line is, although the insurance company will pay, it's your responsibility. You're providing an insurance company that will pay. If the insurance company decides not to cover it, it's generally you have the primary responsibility. So you're right. In this case will be pretty bad, and therefore just don't do it. So if they want to be moichel, if they are moichel, then wonderful. It's the dovish of the moment, they want to be moichel, that's fine. On the other hand, if they're not sending you the bill just because they're miyayish, they know they're wasting their time, they're not getting it, you know, that's not, I don't know if that would qualify as a appeal. So you do have to be careful. If there's a policy, very often they tell you, you know, a 24-hour cancellation policy, they make a policy, then good. Then 25 hours before if you cancel, even if they don't fill the slot, if that's the policy and they've accepted it, a tnai, a minor, a vayadav shal mamon, a tnai. But if you're just going to breach it and then, you know, they're not going to want to send it to you because they know they're wasting their, it's just a waste of a stamp. You know, that's not a mechila, and you should, when you go in there, you should talk to them and be
nisadi.
There
is no loss, it's mutter l'chatzkila?
No, it's going to be tarumais regardless, and it's going to be mechusar amana regardless. You made a commitment and you're changing your mind. But they won't be able to send you a bill because there's no hefset mamon. So going back to our kala. So in this case, this conversation took place a week before the wedding. So we really have to figure out how many people out there are throwing $5,000 at a makeup artist to get them for the wedding. So if she's in tremendous demand, she just goes to the next person on the waiting list and she'll have a job regardless, then wonderful. There's no hefset mamon. You only have to deal with the mechusar amana issue. On the other extreme, if she has not done a chasana in 5 years, because anyone who hears the price just runs for the hills. And in that case, so even though you hired her, now that you changed your mind, you haven't caused her a loss, she didn't turn away anybody else, and therefore she can't send you a bill, we only deal with the mechusar amon issue. If she has that middle level, where she is pretty full, someone called her about that particular night, she said, I'm sorry, I'm booked, and now it's too late to go back to the person, then already you're dealing with a tzias mamon, and she'd have the right to send the person a bill in order to make up for that loss that she was suffering.
She never mentioned anything about the high price and the initial...
Okay, very good, very good. So let's deal with that now. Let's deal with the issue of when you hired her, you didn't discuss the price. How does that change the issue? So to answer that question, I want to deal with a slightly different scenario. Let's change the story. Same thing happened. They texted about, okay, they made arrangements. The makeup artist shows up to the wedding. They had never discussed money. She does her work. The end of the job, goes over to the father of the kala and says, $5,000, $6,500. What happens then? Now, this is not so uncommon. You go to a doctor, you have an issue. He helps you out, and you get a bill. Do you discuss beforehand what the fee or what the rate is going to be? Very often not. So does that mean the doctor can send you a bill for whatever he wants, and you have to pay? Or the insurance has to pay? And so the question that comes up is, and it doesn't come up with a doctor, it can come up with an attorney, You can come up with really any professional. You bring your tax returns to an accountant, and he does it, and then he sends you a bill. You can. It also comes up with a contractor. You hire a contractor, you generally negotiate a price. You spend X amount of dollars for this construction. Along the way, he calls your wife and wants to know if she wants to do an upgrade. Sometimes people will just say yes, 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 yes. And then, when they get the bill, they say, wait a second, this is not what I had in mind. We never discussed the price. So what happens when you hire someone, he does the job, you don't discuss pricing. So here the halacha is that if there is a range of prices, some workers charge more, some workers charge less, and you do the job without discussing what the rate is going to be, you only pay pachos shevapoyer. You pay the lowest price out there. And the reason for that is very simple. We're all Jewish. We all like bargains. And the employee knows that the boss if he has a choice, but certainly does not want to pay him anything more than he has to. If you charge top dollar, if you charge a premium, because that's how you work, you have to speak up. And if you don't speak up, since you know the boss is expecting or planning on paying as little as he can get away with, by not speaking up, you're accepting his das, if you will, and you only get paid publish of requirement. And therefore, if you do a job and you give a bill at the end, so the only amount that the boss has to do, the homeowner, the employer has to pay is publish of requirement, the lowest available rate. Now this gets a little bit subjective. Because if you're involved in litigation, and it's a complex litigation, you have a partner of a big city firm representing you. So when he presents you with a bill at the end of the case, and he billed at $900 an hour, to come to Beis Din and say no, last month I got a speeding ticket. And I got the attorney to represent me in traffic court, and he charged $150 an hour. So he might be an attorney, he might be legal work, but you're comparing apples to oranges. We have to deal with the type of work or the type of worker, the same class that you actually hire. And therefore, when you're dealing with lawyers, you're dealing with accountants, you're dealing with doctors, there are certain tiers or certain classes you have to deal with. But within that class, if the big city partners, some charge $1,000 an hour, some charge $900, some charge $800, without discussing it in advance, you're only going to be able to demand the pachas of a pilot, the 800, because if you wanted more than that, you would have to speak up. Now, although this is a halacha psuka, in practice, I think very often that this halacha will not apply. And that is, it's true when you hire a worker, very often workers negotiate. There are different prices, depending on how desperate they are, depending on how desperate you are, they'll agree for a different price. So if you don't discuss it in advance, they only get the appointment. On the other hand, when you go to a doctor's office, you know good and well the doctor has a set fee that he charges for each operation, for each procedure, for each visit. If you don't ask him in advance, what are you doing? You're accepting what he charges. So when there's an office with a set formal fee, everyone knows they have their rate, then the reason why people don't ask is, what's the point? The person came with a heart condition, it's bad enough he needs the operation, and he hears what it's going to cost him, it's going to make things worse. So he just goes in, he knows that's what he... So to go and have it done and negotiate afterwards, I don't think it's going to work. The cases in halacha are discussing things that are negotiable. You go ahead, you handle, there are different prices. So if you don't negotiate, you're accepting pachas of a pilot. But if it's a type of situation, a formal office that has set prices and everyone pays the same, I would suggest this halacha doesn't apply. And if you don't negotiate in advance, you're really accepting accepting that offer, and you'd be stuck paying it. Now, let's go back now to our makeup artist. Had she approached the father after the wedding and said, my fee is $5,000, what would be the halacha? Says we just discussed. When you don't hide, discuss the price, you get paid pachas of a pilot. If they're makeup artists that get paid $500 for a wedding, that's all she can demand. She doesn't tell you in advance what her fee is going to be. Now, arguably, she can say, I'm not in the same class as the $500 a wedding people. I'm a cut above, top-tier artists charge more. Very possible it's true. So assuming the top-tier charges $1,000 an hour, starts at $1,000 a wedding, she'd be entitled to that. But for her to say, my fee is $5,000, I don't work for less than that, she can do what she wants, but she would have to negotiate that in advance. So in that case, if she didn't talk about it in advance, and she comes after the wedding, then the father of the kala can say, nothing doing. We never discussed this in advance. I don't have to pay your exorbitant fee.
But if she has one rate, then she's the same as the doctor's.
Okay, that's true. But even in the case of a doctor or a lawyer, if you know a partner in a law firm charges between $800 and $1,000, so you don't bother asking because that's the range. You heard this person is a great attorney. He knows he's best friends with the judge. Whatever your cheshbonos are, you're using him. So where he is in that range doesn't matter. You're accepting. But if you come afterwards, he tells you, by the way, I charge $25,000 an hour. So there's no way to say there's an implied acceptance when you're doing something which is beyond the pale, which is not, you know, which is bechlal not an acceptable rate. So I agree with you. Within the range, and everyone has it, you know there's a set price, and there's a range of $1,000, $1,500 for this kind of thing, good. But when you want to go way above that, this svara is not going to help you, and she's not going to be able to present you with a bill.
Would it make a difference if the father never spoke to her before and she says, I never...
Okay, good. We'll get there.
Why? Where does the consumer, where does the makeup artist get defended? I mean, every consumer now can decide to go to any contract or makeup artist, not ask for the price, know that they're very good at whatever they do, and they'll just have to pay quite a lot.
Oh, no, not publisher quite a lot. The very simple protection. Be upfront. And if you want to charge a fruit.
Why does the
because that's the halacha. Because the halacha is people want bargains. People don't want to overpay if they have a choice. And if you walk around and you tell people I'm $5,000, they probably won't hire you. So then you go in knowing, if I don't explain, if I'm not upfront with my pricing, I'm not going to be able to charge more than the lower rate. So it's a responsibility. If you want a premium, speak up. And the Chafetz Chaim actually says, the Chafetz Chaim, at the end of Avos Chesed, he gives some business advice. He says, going into a transaction without discussing very clearly what the terms are is a terrible idea. Because he says, one of two things are going to happen. At the end, the other person is going to ask for a lot, we're going to want to pay a little. So you have two choices. Either you're going to have to be mavata, in which case your shalom bayis fund is going to get depleted very quickly. It's going to cost you a lot of money. Or you're going to fight, in which case, he says, very often, you know, you're going to use your judgment of what pachas of a poilim is and what tier or class he belongs to, and he'll say something else. And you may get it right, you may get it wrong. You'll probably be over yisur of gezel or oishik and all sorts of other potential yisurim. Therefore, the Chafetz Chaim, the simple way to avoid it is just be upfront. Talk about in advance what he has to provide and what his payment is going to be.
She did her research.
She's very good, and therefore she's going to get paid like a very good makeup artist. But if she's charging 5 or 10 times the normal rate, she has a responsibility to be upfront and let people know. The reason why she wasn't, very likely, is that she may have realized that when she tells people what she charges, they don't hire her. There's usually a reason why people don't want to talk about their pricing, and that is a risk that they're taking. Because if you want to charge a premium, let the people know what they're in for.
Is it enough to say just some general statement?
Oh, good. We'll get to that. What?
Is it enough to say just some general statement? I'm an expensive contractor.
No. Because that we find already in Hilchos, I know, which hopefully we'll get to, that the person would say, I know you're expensive, but there's expensive and there's expensive. So it's true. If Pachas of a Poilim is 1,000 and you say you're expensive, you're not going to be able to get paid. You're not going to be able to, the customer won't be able to say pay 1,000 because they knew you were expensive. But if someone who's $1,500 is expensive or $2,000 is expensive, and now you want to use that disclaimer to go up to 5,000, that's not going to work. Because they're only mindful the minimal amount, you know, to the lowest possible price that would be considered expensive. So again, you want to charge a premium, be upfront. If you're worth it, they'll get it. If not, they'll say no because they're just not ready to pay that kind of price. So based on this, if after the chasm she came with a bill, the Kaal would be able to say, nothing doing. You didn't ask for it, you get paid Papa Shabapoylin. Whatever a top-tier artist gets, that I have to pay, not more than it. So now what happened in our case? In our case, this happened a week before the wedding. What's the makeup artist's problem? Taina. The taina is, you caused me a loss by backing out. But if the halacha is that had she done her work and presented a bill, you then would not have to pay her the $5,000. You'd get away with $1,500. So then, enochanami. If the father says, listen, I'm willing to give you $1,500 to a pilot, take it or leave it. Is he being chaser? Is he retracting? Is he walking back the commitment that he made? No. Because his whole commitment was, do the work, I'll pay you like a good makeup artist. He never made a commitment to pay her exorbitant premium. So in that case, he's not being chaser. And as long as he says $500 and that's it, then she has the time. But if he's willing to pay $500 a pilot, and she only springs on him a week before the wedding, no, I don't want that, I want $5,000, he's not being chaser, he's not the Mechus Ramana, he's not the one causing a hefset. And in that case, he would have absolutely no problem retracting. It was a poor decision on her part. Because she never told this person that this is my fee. And in halacha, she's not entitled to the fee if she doesn't disclose it. So it wasn't wise of her, but the bottom line is, she turned down a $5,000 job for what was essentially a $1,500 job. Now, this would all be wonderful had the father called me before he spoke to the makeup artist. The problem is that he saw what was going on, he saw the collar in tears, he saw his wife all upset. So Laman HaShalom, he told the makeup artist, okay, $5,000 we're on. Now at that point, L'choira, he knew exactly what he was getting himself into. He made a commitment. So at that point, if he would change his mind, that would probably be Mechus Ramon. Now if he would change his mind, you probably couldn't get him on a Tzvias Mama. Unless she turned down another customer somewhere between the week and the wedding, which is not so practical. Because if he had the right to be closer right away, and he's not down to this, and she already turned away someone a month ago, he's not liable for that. Because he had only had a $1,500 commitment at that point, not a $5,000 commitment. The fact that now he says, I will hire you, I'll pay you the $5,000, and changes his mind, now that would not be a tzvias mama, because the loss was already done already, it's already a sunk cost. You already turned around everyone else, it's a week before, it's too late. So this would only be a question of Mechus Ramana. And Yesh Wadoin, perhaps, whether it would be Mechus Ramana, or whether this would be considered a Matana Meruba, agreeing to give that amount of money, perhaps, is a large gift, and he had the right to be blessed. But in truth, he really has a better excuse. Why? Let's change the case slightly. Again. An hour before the wedding, the makeup artist rolls over to the father and says, by the way, we didn't discuss pricing. I'm letting you know right now. My fee is $5,000. I need cash or a bank check, or I'm not doing the kala. What's the halacha then? So the same way we discussed before, dover oven. If you hire a worker, in the last minute you change your mind, you change your mind, and he can't find another job, he suffered a loss, he can send you a bill. The opposite case is true as well. You hire someone to take care of this chasana, and then they back out when it's too late to find a replacement. So here, it's a davar avod for the employer. Now, davar avod doesn't mean you're losing money. If the wedding takes place without makeup, the kedushin will be hal, you won't be any poorer than you were before. I know he's married, he's laughing at me. But nevertheless, because you hired them to accomplish a purpose, and that purpose is not going to get done, you can't find a replacement, it's a davar avod. And the halacha is, the worker is not allowed to back out, and if he does, soicher aleihem oimata. You can go ahead and you can imata them, you can promise them, and tell them, okay, I'm going to give you $5,000, let them do the job, and afterwards you can say, mishata nevach, I wasn't serious. And the reason why I was allowed to play with you, or the reason I was allowed to fool you and lie to you, is because I was doing that to prevent you from doing an avod. You had no right to give notice an hour before the wedding you're not going to do it and try to extort from me. So I'm allowed to be mata you. I'm allowed to tell you, yes, no problem, deal. I'm good for the money. Come to me. I'll give you the money. You're allowed to do that because you have the right to be mata them to stop them from taking advantage of you. In Cain, even if you made such a commitment, because you have the right to be mata them, then there would be certainly no tibias mamon if she turned away other jobs. There certainly would be no mechusar amana, and he would be able to get away with it.
What does he have to pay?
The pachas shabbat pari, the minimal amount that someone in that class level is able to charge. What? It doesn't make a difference. He can still say Meshatan Yibach, Matzah. Again, you start making real kinyonim, Meshatan Yibach is a shayla. Mestama, you can be Moisra Moida. I guess I'm going to pull out the eight of Kedushin, say Moisra Moida b'feichem. I'm doing this under duress, and that should work as long as it's Makarot. Now, this really leads us, or this issue, or question leads us to one last point. And that is, does a makeup artist have the right to say, I want $5,000 for my services? Are there any halachas about pricing? So this leads us to the concept of Oinoah. And Oinoah, for some reason, is not a very well-known halacha. But there's an Isser D'Oraisa of Oinoah, which is ripping someone off is Asur M'Doraisa. Now it applies both to the buyer and to the seller. If you have goods to sell, someone comes in, a tourist comes into your store, they have no idea what the value of this item is, so you jack up the price and you charge them double its value, that is an Isser D'Oraisa. You didn't tell any lie. You didn't, there was no fraud, there's no misrepresentation. He walked in, he asked you what is the cost, you simply gave him, named your price. He said, fine, gave you the money and walked down. But there's an Isser D'Oraisa of charging someone more than the value of an item. And the same thing is true the other way. If you have a seller, you're buying a used car, the seller doesn't recognize the value of the item and is willing to sell it at below market. You walk in, you ask what you want for the car, they give you the price, you cut a check. No negotiating, no handling, no fraud, no lies. The very fact that you're paying less than the fair market value, you're taking advantage of his naivety and lack of knowledge of its value. That is an Isser D'Oraisa of Oinoah. Now, not only is there an Isser D'Oraisa, but very often there's a tibias mamon. If you buy an item, and you walk into a store, you buy a suit. The salesman is rather new on the job. He gets confused, and he charges you too little for the suit. So it's supposed to be a $300 suit. He ends up selling it to you for $225. The halacha is, you come home, you tell your wife what kind of bargain you get. You get a phone call from the store owner that night. I know you bought the suit. I'm very sorry, but the price is mislabeled. You owe me another $75 back. So the halacha is, when the oinah is more than a sixth, the person who was ripped off has the right to undo the whole deal. He can say, give me back the suit, I'll give back the $225, it was a mistake, that wasn't the fair price, the deal is off. That's when Oinoah is more than a sixth. If Oinoah is exactly a sixth, a $300 suit, you pay $250 for it. That night you get a phone call from the store owner and says, listen, I'm very sorry, the salesman made a mistake, it was supposed to be $300, so please come to back to the store and give me $50. You say nothing to it. I don't want to, if you're going to charge me full price, I don't pay retail. You want to charge $300, I'm returning the suit. The halacha is nothing doing. When the oinah is exactly a sixth, everyone is locked into the sale, but you have to refund or pay extra the amount of the discrepancy, the amount of the oinah. So not only is oinah an Isser D'Oraisa, it also creates a financial claim. Person who was ripped off can either undo the deal or he can demand that his money back.
What if the Dina Malchusa is different than that
call? If in Dina Malchusa Dina, it generally does not have a concept of Oinoah. In Bidinehem, the responsibility is each party takes care of himself. So if I want to charge you $50 for this umbrella, if you're willing to pay it, Bidinehem, that's your problem. Caveat and tour, you have to take care of yourself. Halacha is very different. Halacha is when you transact, if you're buying or selling, you have a responsibility to be fair to the person. And just because you could get away with something doesn't mean you're allowed to, and therefore, even though b'dinayim there's no such claim, if both parties are Jewish, they'll be HBS and no, and you'll be able to demand your money back. Now, it's important to note that Oinah has nothing to do with price controls. Halacha doesn't set pricing. Your profit margin can be as high as you want. Again, limited cases where it's takano is about oif nefesh, certain limited, but in normal cases, you can charge whatever you want. The point is, the market forces create set a price. Once there is a price, Oinah says, don't take advantage of the person's lack of knowledge, only charge him what the fair market value of this item is. Now, a number of years ago, when I wrote a book, Business Halacha, when it was published by Artscroll. So when it came out, it was the list price was approximately $24. Someone brought it to my attention that there was a seller on Amazon that was selling the Sefer for $30. So I took the liberty of sending off a brief email to the seller. I introduced myself. I'm the author of the book. I want to thank you for helping spread the ideas and the concept of Chosh Mishpat, but please refer to page 163, Hilchos Oinah, where if the Sefer sells for $24, selling it for $30 is an Isser of Oinah. Believe it or not, I did get a response. The response was, dear Rabbi Marburger, you wrote a wonderful book about Chosh Mishpat, but you know diddly squat about selling books. If you want to know why you're wrong, give me, here's my number, you can contact me. So I called him. And he explained the following. He explained that anyone who wants to buy a Sefer, if you live in New York, if you live in town, you live in Chicago, you walk into your Sforum store, you buy a Sefer. You want to order it online, you go to your sforumstore.com, you go to Artscroll, you order the Sefer. He says, who's ordering for me? So apparently Amazon back then had a rule, shipping and handling was fixed, I think it was $4. That's what we were able to charge for shipping and handling. He said, the only orders I get are from Texas or from places that are hundreds of miles away from a farm store. And the shipping there costs $8 or $9. So I have to build the shipping cost into the cost of the book because I can't pass that along, and therefore they're really getting their money's worth. Okay, I'm not a buck in Amazon, in Halacha, in the Kaaba, but the concept that he's bringing out is certainly true. Pricing changes. The price of something in Chicago is going to be different than in Lakewood, the price in Lakewood will be different than Manhattan. When you go into it, the price of 12 ounces of soda in Walmart is going to be different than the price of 12 ounces of soda in a hotel, you know, in a hotel lobby in Midtown Manhattan. So you'll have to look with a whole thing on Halacha Azman, but there is a concept of Oinah. Now, based on this, it would seem that if you're providing a service and you're charging more, at least a sixth more than the fair market value, now already not only is a question of Chosh Mishpat being able to get Mechusar Amon or not Mechusar Amon, Hefsedim, L'Choyro, the makeup artist, is being over in Isser Avayon, ripping off the collar. So this is not so simple because there are a number of potential attainments. The first is, the concept of Oinah doesn't apply to karka. Ein Oinah l'karkois. If you buy real estate and you overpay for it, you're not going to be able to undo the deal by saying that there's Oinah. Now, according to some Rishonim, it's still usher to do so, but there's no claim, there's no to be a smuggler by karka. The Rambam says that the same way karka has no Oinah, avodim have no Oinah. You buy a slave and Eved Chukas Lekarka, there's no Oinah as well. What about a payah? What about an employee? Zogar Rambam, an employee is similar to an Eved. He's like a slave. I think all the employees in the room can relate to that. So because you're doing it to an Eved, the same way an Eved has Oinah, a payah has no Oinah, so a payah as well would not have Oinah. And based on that, if you hire a worker and you're underpaying him, or if he's charging too much, ain't I know the karkois would mean there's no financial claim. It would seem now that the makeup artist can do what he wants. Problem is twofold. First of all, even by karka, where there's no Oinah, Many shitas hold that's only until double. Normally, you can charge up to a sixth more than fair market value before oinah kicks in. Kaka, you have double. Once you're once you're double the fair market value, that's a nekav toyes regardless. So therefore, if the makeup artist is charging double the going rates for a good artist, then good, she has what to rely on. You won't be able to undo the deal. But if she's charging three times the value, even if it's like karka, still she would have a problem going on. The second issue that she has is there's a distinction between a poyel and a kaplan. This is a distinction that comes up in Hilchos Sefiras Poyelim, comes up in Yonah. But the distinction is as follows. When you have a salaried worker, he works 9 to 5, he gets paid by the hour. And during that time, he works for you. So that is a poyel, and that is similar to an eved. A worker like that does not have oinah. On the other hand, if you have an independent contractor, you bring your car to the mechanic, it needs a new transmission, it's going to cost you $2,000. So although you're paying him for his work, okay, putting aside the fact of the parts, although you're paying him for his work, is he your eved? Is he your slave? No. He chooses when to do the work. He chooses how to do the work. And he's not even really billing you by the hour. He's billing you for the job. If you accomplish this task, I will pay you the $2,000. That's very different. A poyel, you're paying him for his time. If he spends the whole day working, but he doesn't accomplish anything, you can fire him. But if he did what he was supposed to be doing, he's not responsible for the end result. An independent contractor, where fix my transmission, you get $2,000, he can spend 25 hours working on it. If he doesn't fix it, he can't send you a bill. So the idea, this exception that a poyel has no oinah, is someone who's on a salary, he's working under your direction, he is similar to an eved. On the other hand, an independent contractor, I'll pay you X amount of dollars, get this job done. A koblin is not similar to an eved and has the regular hilchos oinah. Now, arguably, if you're paying someone to put makeup on a koblin, so that if they're charging by the hour, she says you get 3 hours for $5,000, okay, it's a regular poyel. But she's getting paid to do someone's face, it's a task, it's not by the hour, arguably she would be a koblin. If she's a koblin, then she would be back to the regular hilchos oinah, and wouldn't be able to go more than a sixth. Now this is not so simple, the nesivos in Reish Tamid Daled is mesupik, because even though you're a koblin, he or she has to work right before the chasna. It's a set time, she can't decide when to do it. She can't say, I'll do the makeup after the chasana. She has to do it right now. So there, the nesivos goes back and forth, whether you get paid for a task, but it has to be done at a specific time. The nesivos is specific, so it would be totally in this child. Now, in truth, the hilchos oinah probably won't apply for one final reason. And that is, there's a concept of ein hadas type. When you buy something or sell something, you're taking advantage of the other person's lack of knowledge. That's oinah. On the other hand, if you charge a price that is so exorbitant, is so absurd, everyone knows this is not the fair price, and they're paying it because they're desperate, they're paying it because they very much want you, they're paying whatever their cheshbonos are, but if it's ein hadas toya, everyone realizes it's not a fair price, and they agree anyway, then there's no reason I know. You can spend your money on whatever you'd like. Everyone has different priorities. If you want to overspend, you could. The oinah is when one party doesn't realize or may not realize of the oinah, I take advantage of him, then there's an issue of oinah and there's a claim of oinah. But when it's so absurd that everyone in the room knows this is not the normal price, I'm doing it for another reason, then the hilchos oinah will not apply. So in this case, where she's charging something which is so blatantly unreasonable and off the mark, someone that agrees to it cannot afterwards say that it's oinah because it's ein hadas toya, sever b'kivo, and they've accepted it. Now, just a little to end off, postscript. So I met the father after the chasana, and he was mamash on a high. He told me the wedding was beautiful, the kala was glowing, my wife felt so good that it was b'shalom, and we had done the right thing, and it was a beautiful event. But the florist. Wait till you hear what the florist did. But for that, you'll have to invite me back again.